is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
This is Kip Ione, head men's basketball coach at Willamette University, founder of Teams of Men, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are jumping on after witnessing, I don't even know what you call it, obviously an epic Durant performance, but a typical Milwaukee Bucks performance, a Bud masterpiece. I don't know what you call this thing.
Well, it's a dumpster fire, Mike. That's what it is. They had no business losing this game. You got James Harden, who may as well had one leg running around out there. He clearly wasn't himself. Listen, we've given him a lot of crap, Mike, and we talked about it today at camp. He's the fact that he's gutting it out. He gutted it out tonight and played. We have to commend him for because the Nets had said he wasn't going to play, and then he fought to play. He argued to play. He said, "I can play. Let me play. Let me go out there." Now, clearly, he was compromised. But here's the thing: I saw someone tweet this, Mike, and when I saw it, I was like, "That's a really good tweet." With like 7 minutes left to go in the game, they ran a dribble handoff with Harden, and Pat Connaughton scored an easy basket. Do you know how many times the Milwaukee Bucks ran that play again the rest of the game?
I'm gonna guess zero.
It is zero. He's clearly compromised. Listen, I give Harden a lot of credit for getting through that, for playing tonight. Obviously, the game belongs to Durant, but the bigger question is, Mike, why in the heck is Kevin Durant not being guarded by Giannis in the last 5 minutes? You are a two-time, and you didn't win it this year, you're the two-time MVP over the last two seasons. Why is he not guarding the best player on the floor? And I know PJ Tucker he didn't do a good job tonight. He made it difficult for Durant. Durant was playing otherworldly, but you got to put Giannis on Durant. And if you don't put Giannis on Durant, that is an offense that you should be fired for. Because I guarantee it wasn't Giannis's call that he wasn't guarding Durant. There's zero chance that was the case, right? Maybe I'm wrong, but Budenholzer, if you lose this series, You're going to be on the unemployment line.
Look, I don't even know where to begin with this game, in all honesty. Durant was incredible. I mean, the shots that he made, I said it last week that when he goes up for shots, and I know he didn't play well in Milwaukee, and I know PJ Tucker did an unbelievable job on him in games 3 and 4, but it just feels like the guy isn't going to miss. He raises up for his jumper, and I just expect it to go in. And tonight, obviously, to the tune of 16 of 23 and 4 of 9 from 3 and 13 of 16 from the line, it did go in. And that says nothing about his 10 assists and 17 rebounds. It was just an unbelievable Durant performance. And yet, in the same breath, the Bucks in the middle of the third quarter up 17 and could have been up 35 at that point. I thought the guys that inside the NBA, Shaq and Charles and Kenny, they all said Milwaukee just is playing stupid and they're up 16, but they should be up 24 or 25 or 30 or whatever it was. And I agree wholeheartedly. When you look at just, and I know they were shooting 55% from the field, I think, at halftime, and yet it felt like they should be able to get any shot they want because of the size mismatches. Because why are you not just completely hunting James Harden on every possession? I mean, he couldn't guard anybody. I mean, he could not guard anybody. Look, you want to give him credit for gutting it out? I'll give him credit for gutting it out. I mean, he played 46 minutes, but he was largely ineffective. I would say, in all honesty, he was probably, if you just look at his performance, I'm not sure he wasn't a net negative for the Nets. Now, psychologically, and him being out there and whatever, and him soaking up minutes that other guys didn't have to play, sure. But I don't know. I mean, look, the Bucks had to win that game. They had to win it from a standpoint of you have to win it if you want to win the series. But you just have to win that game when Irving's out, when Harden is a shell of himself.
Joe Harris couldn't make a shot. No, I'm sorry,
Joe Harris did nothing. Blake Griffin had another good game. Uncle Jeff Green.
Jeff Green.
I mean, that, Uncle Jeff Green. Uncle Jeff Green is the difference in this game, in all honesty. I mean, you could have predicted. I mean, there were tons and tons of people going into this game that said, if the Nets are going to have a chance, Durant's going to have to go for at least 40. Are you surprised he got 49? I'm not. I mean, I expected that kind of performance out of Durant. Maybe not quite as otherworldly as what we got.
48 minutes?
Well, see, here's the thing. Now, he played – no, I did not expect 48 minutes. How's he bounced back from that 48-minute game? Coming back, traveling, and then playing on Thursday.
So I got to read you a tweet. So Reggie Miller tweeted – I got to read this to you. If you are – I'm just going to throw this out there to see what the responses will be. If you're Steve Nash and the Nets, would you sit James Harden and Kevin Durant in Game 6 because of their heavy minutes tonight and push all your chips to the center table for Game 7? Jason Concepcion retweeted that, and he wrote, tell me you bet the series to go in 7 games without telling me that you bet the series to go 7 games.
Yeah, no, you're not doing that. They're not. They're definitely not
Reggie
sitting
Miller, come
this
on,
game.
Man.
Now, conversely, if the Bucks are up 17 in the middle of the third quarter in Game 6, I'm not so sure that you throw all your chips on the table there and try to come back in the same way that you did tonight or the same way you would in Game 7 or the same way you would if Game 6 was in Brooklyn rather than in Milwaukee. But I watch the Bucks, and when they look good, you're like, man, this team's unstoppable. But yet – it really comes down to, are they making threes? Is the ball going in the basket when they shoot? Because when they get to the, I mean, that's second half offense. The number of times it was just a guy dribbling around, and then trying to, at the last second, make some kind of move and score was just, I mean, it was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. And on the defensive end, you made the point of putting Giannis on Durant at some point. Look, I get that maybe you don't want him playing Durant the entire game, picking up foul trouble, wearing him out. PJ Tucker, as I mean, we can say whatever we want about how well Durant played tonight, but it wasn't because PJ Tucker played poor defense on him. I mean, PJ Tucker was right there every single time Durant raises up. It's just a lot of times with him, the defense is irrelevant. But yet, at some point in the last 4 minutes, don't you have to say, look, this guy is just torching us on every level. Let's put Giannis on him and see what happens. Don't you have to try that and just see?
Listen, and give it a shot. Budenholzer was just too busy frying an egg on his head that he couldn't figure out. Those lights were pretty heavy in Brooklyn Barclays Center tonight, Mike. He couldn't figure out what to do.
I don't know what the psychology of it is, and obviously there's no way to quantify it, but I can say that as someone who's rooting for the Bucks in this series, that every time they cut to Budenholzer, I get more nervous and I feel like we're about to lose. And if I'm a player and I look over and I see that guy and he's just every time I look at him, he's just so frantic. It looks like he has no idea what just happened. Like there's a play and he's frantically moving side to side and he's shaking and he's got these bug eyes and he's looking around and he just looks like he inspires no confidence whatsoever. Now, again, is that everything? Does that mean that he doesn't know what he's doing in and of itself? No. But if I was a player and I looked over and saw him and his demeanor and the way he acts over on the sideline.
Hey, Mike, it inspires me.
Does it?
Inspires me to find a new coach.
I don't know. And I look at Milwaukee tonight and you say, I mean, they got kind of what you think you're going to get out of guys. I mean, PJ Tucker didn't score, but you don't really expect him to have a huge game. Giannis goes for 34 and 12, shot over 50% from the line. You're not going to ask much more from him other than to catch the ball on that last pass from Middleton where he would have had an automatic dunk that would have tied the game. That was rough when he dropped that. Middleton doesn't shoot it that great, but still he has 25. I don't think you'd say Middleton played poorly tonight. You would have liked him to finish a few more plays and shoot it a little better, but he didn't play horribly. Brooke Lopez, 6 of 10, 3 of 5 from 3. The thing with Brooke Lopez is that he spends so much time standing out on the perimeter. They pointed it out at halftime of, again, inside the NBA, of here's Brooke Lopez being guarded by Mike James. Here's Brooke Lopez being guarded by Joe Harris. And early in Brooke Lopez's career, he was a monster down on the block.
And when he played for the Brooklyn Nets.
Correct. And look, when he catches the ball in there, he can score. When Giannis catches the ball in there, I know he's not as smooth of a post player as potentially he could be, but I like his odds better with his back to the basket against an inferior defender trying to score than I do him out on the perimeter trying to create. Although he did do better on that. He did in isolation tonight. He was able to drive by guys a few times. He picked up a couple offensive fouls, but in many cases he was able to drive by.
He's got to make an adjustment on those drives, by the way, because he's throwing those elbows up like every single time.
Well, the spin either works and looks great, or the defender reads it perfectly. And
I think of that Jeff Green one that they had where he
and Griffin had him a couple times.
Not
necessarily tonight, but throughout the series.
Yeah, so he's got to do something about that because, like, I can honestly, Mike, probably think of, like, one time that I can remember. And I don't think that this is a star situation because, obviously, Giannis is, I think we could argue, one of the stars of the league. But how many times can you remember LeBron on a spin move getting called for an offensive foul? Ever. And we've watched more games of LeBron than anyone. Can you think of a time where on a spin move he got called for an offensive foul?
No, but I think he has a lot more tricks in his bag than Giannis does. I mean, when Giannis drives, one, nobody's afraid of him stopping to pull up. So there's that. I think his two moves are Euro step, spin, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what else he's really going to do. So you're really anticipating one of those two things. And if you guess right, there's a chance that you can get him to pick up a charge. And he's not, I mean, he's a good passer. But he's not a great passer. he's not getting in there and shredding defenses the way LeBron or the way Luka does. I thought Giannis, honestly, tonight, I thought he played really, really well. I thought in the moments when the Bucks got it going, it was because he was able to put the ball on the floor, get to the basket. I thought he had some nice post moves. He had a couple little jump hooks. I thought he rebounded the ball well. I would, you know, obviously you'd like to see him make, especially that free throw down the stretch where he goes 1 for 2 that could have cut it to 2, and instead they only cut it to 3, and that changes the whole thing. And his free throw shooting is a problem. We've been over it over and over and over again. And I just don't know that as a superstar, you just can't quite be the finisher that you need to be if you can't step up to the line and hit 80-85% of your free throws. It's just, you just can't be as effective because teams are going to follow you in those situations.
Yep.
But I thought you got everything out of him that you could have wanted. I thought he came to play, and yet it still feels like, I said, they left so much on the table in terms of hunting the right matchups with their half court offense and trying to get guys in screen and roll and get the switches and get the matchups that they wanted. It was obvious Harden couldn't stay in front of anybody. And the fact that you're not trying to find him on every single possession, I don't know what you're doing. The fact that Brook Lopez is being guarded by a guy who he outweighs by 100 pounds and is 8 inches taller than on multiple possessions, and you don't figure out a way to, like, hey, we got to at least get this guy the ball and either have him score or have him get doubled and kickouts or whatever. I mean, there's so many things that seem obvious, and my dog is in total and complete agreement. So let me go take care of him. And in the meantime, we'll hear from our sponsors.
Hey, hoop heads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
And we're back. Mike's dog has peed. All is right in the world. And now Mike is going to has one more point that he wants to make.
James Harden, I know you gave him credit earlier in the podcast, and I guess I can give him credit for being out there for 46 minutes, but he's 1 for 10 from the floor. He's 0 for 8 from 3. He did have 8 assists. Couldn't guard anyone. It's not going to be his Michael Jordan flu game, let's put it that way. And I just, look, he's very, very lucky that he has Kevin Durant on his team. Let's put it that way. And credit for him gutting it out and playing, but I don't know. I come away from this not thinking more of James Harden. I don't think less of him, but I don't think more of him because he came back and played through this hamstring injury. I just think he wasn't very good. Did his presence help Brooklyn psychologically and maybe impact the Bucks negatively? Possibly. But there was really not a whole lot out on the floor that he did that I think impacted the winning performance by the Brooklyn Nets. This was Durant's show all the way. And I don't know. It's another 1 for 10 performance in the playoffs. And you can say I'm crazy because he got it out through that hamstring injury. But look, if you're out there and you play 46 minutes and you're at least jogging up and down the floor, you got to make some shots. And if it's not for Durant's epic performance, and it's not for like Budenholzer falling asleep at the switch, and it's not for the Bucks abandoning any semblance of offensive movement to just go one-on-one, and if it's not for Uncle Jeff Green going 7 for 8 from 3. I mean, there were a lot of things that had to go right for Brooklyn in the second half and a lot of things that had to go wrong for Milwaukee. And it just felt like, even as I'm watching that game, I mean, Durant was incredible, but you're just watching Milwaukee and you're going, how are they letting this lead slip from 17 to 11 to 7 to 3, and then all of a sudden they're down, and now we're down 4. And man, it just it felt like it slipped away, not quickly, but felt like it slipped away slowly from Milwaukee. I don't know.
I'm going to counterpoint you, Mike.
All right, go for it.
I've been on record. I'm not a James Harden stan. I do not like him as a basketball player. I hate watching him play basketball. And we can talk about he went 1-for-10 from the field, and he didn't play well. But I think there's one thing we have to consider, is that it definitely opened up the floor for Durant. Whether we want to admit it or not, Harden being on the floor opened up. Because for whatever godforsaken reason, if I saw James Harden in his shot in the first quarter, I would not be guarding him like they were guarding him tonight. They were up on him. It doesn't make sense to me. Let him shoot. He clearly couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. But the defense had to play for him like he was an MVP. He scored 5 points. It's embarrassing that they were guarding him as tight as they were guarding him. I know they were probably trying to force him to make turnovers, which I don't even know. I don't have how many he had, but he didn't really. I don't feel like he made anything that egregious. I know there was one play in the first quarter he like fumbled the ball.
He had 4.
Yeah, so I mean, 4 is not that much. I mean, it is a lot, but it's not like in the James Harden. It's not a ridiculous amount. It's not a ridiculous amount. So what I'm saying is, him being on the floor, Milwaukee overplayed him, which then gave Kevin Durant more room to work with. So I think that's the counterpoint. I think if they go into the game 6 with the game plan of, okay, we're going to let James Harden shoot the ball a little bit more, we're going to force him to do some create, then I think that will work better for them. So that's my counterpoint. I agree with you. He was pitiful tonight, but they didn't attack him. They didn't take advantage of him on defense, and they guarded him like he was the MVP, James Harden, not a guy who literally probably hasn't played basketball in 10, 15 days. I don't even know. Was it game one of what series was it? Was it game one of this series?
Or yeah, game one of this series where he played for 43 seconds.
So what I'm saying is that's stupid. Like that's, but the fact that they had a game plan for him, Mike, I think that is the difference. Him gutting it out and being out there opened it up for Durant. And that's what I'm going to say. And I'm going
to
leave
that's
it there.
That's fine. I don't disagree with you, but that to me is more on what Milwaukee did versus the positives that James Harden brought to the table. Like until Harden comes up, you tell me when Harden comes up big
here's
in a
my
big
question,
game.
Mike, but here's
tell
my question.
Me when he does, and I'll change
that's
my
not,
mind.
That's not that. Listen, does Brooklyn have any chance of winning this game tonight if James Harden doesn't play though? Because I think the answer is no.
I don't know. I mean, let's put it this way. I think if I was going to rank things that caused Brooklyn to win this game, at best, Harden is fifth. Fifth. You want to know what's ahead of him?
Well, Durant.
Durant.
Budenholzer being an idiot.
Jeff Green going 7 of 8 from 3.
But Jeff Green, but Mike, are you understanding my point? These players are open because they had to double. Jeff Green wouldn't have been open.
Maybe.
No, there's no doubt. But
Jeff Green's still got to go 7 for 8. I don't care if he's wide open. I mean, we saw Jeff Green have one great game when he was here in Cleveland that won us an Eastern Conference Finals game, right?
Yeah.
Against the Celtics. So we saw it happen once. So look, it can happen, but 7 for 8 from 3 is not going to happen very often. When Jeff Green and Blake Griffin, like if you just said going into this game, hey, Blake Griffin and Jeff Green are going to combine for what they get, 44 points, you'd have been feeling pretty good about Brooklyn's chances. Or you would have said, well, maybe it was just a rout and those guys played in garbage time. To me, it's Durant, it's Griffin, it's Jeff Green, and it's Budenholzer, and then maybe I credit Harden. I get what you're saying, but I do think by the second half, they were playing off of him a lot more and daring him to shoot because they knew that he just didn't have he didn't have the legs.
Shoot,
I mean, his shot.
He didn't shoot in the second half, hardly. He took like 2 shots in the second half. He was 1 for 8 at halftime.
Right, but I'm just saying.
Or 0 for 8 for halftime.
I'm just saying they were off him. They weren't crowding him the same way they would if he was at full strength. I mean, they were coming off of him a little bit. I don't know. I look at this game and I still can't figure out quite how the lead was lost and how Brooklyn just completely took over the game. Look, I know how it happened. It happened because Durant went nuclear and the Bucks offense just became so stagnant and so one-on-one and they didn't take advantage of the things that they have that they could take advantage of against Brooklyn. They just didn't take advantage of them. And it's disappointing if you're Milwaukee. And now you look at, okay, game 6, they're going to go back to Milwaukee. Harden is probably still going to be compromised. You're not thinking that he plays 46 minutes and 48 hours later after traveling that his leg is going to be much better than what it is now. Durant playing 48 minutes, carrying the load that he did. You got to think that he's going to be weary. But at this point, do you have any – I mean, I've been a big Milwaukee supporter for the last 3 years, but there's no way that I can have any confidence at all that they're going to come through in both of these games with all the elements that they need in order to beat Brooklyn in game 6 and game 7. Now, maybe they get game 6 because they're at home and the crowd carries them and these guys are tired and whatever. But coming down the stretch, if it's a close game in game 7, I don't know. I just don't see it. I look at it almost like the Clippers last year with Denver. Once you give up a second half comeback and things just start to crumble, I think Milwaukee, now having crumbled in the last 2 postseasons, I just think that as that doubt starts to creep in, it gets easier to crumble the second time. Let's put it that way. And now the Bucks will be on their 3rd time. So I'm dubious they can get it done at this point. Maybe they win game 6, but man, I don't know. You can go ahead and make your prediction, then I'll give you my thought. I'll give you my exact prediction.
I think the Nets are going to win it. And I think the Nets are going to win it in 6. Because I think this just stomped the life out of them. And Budenholzer better get ready to pack his bags, baby. Pack those bags.
Can they fire him tomorrow?
I mean, that might be an improvement.
I'm calling him we, by the way. Who could Milwaukee bring in 1 day that could make a difference? Who could Milwaukee bring in?
You.
Me. Hey, fellas, let's run some high screen roll with James Harden's guy, and let's maybe try some dribble handoffs too. How about that? Hey. Let's get some action on the weak side when we got a ball screen on one wing. Let's try to get some back screens and some cutting action on the backside. How about that? Hey, man, listen. Durant's got 42 points. There's 4 minutes left in the game. We have
Mike Dunlap on the bench. I didn't realize Mike Dunlap was on the bench.
I saw Mike Dunlap on the bench tonight. I didn't realize he was on the bench either. Maybe Mike Dunlap takes over.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, it's just – maybe it's just Bud's appearance that makes him look even more cartoonish than what he really is. But every time they showed him, it drives me crazy. Like if I was a player and I looked over and I saw that guy on the sideline looking like he had no idea what was going on, he just inspires zero confidence in me as a fan. And maybe it's different as a player because you know the prep that he puts in and whatever. But man, it just seems like there's some simple things that could be done to stem the tide, to change the momentum, to just at least mix things up. And none of them happened. And that's why Milwaukee's down 3-2. I still can't believe they're down 3-2. I still can't. I mean, at the halftime of that game, I was already thinking, well, can they close them out in game 6? Does Brooklyn have one last Herculean effort with it in games, you know? Maybe Kyrie comes back. Maybe Harden comes back and is better. I really thought Milwaukee was going to crush him in the second half, and didn't happen. And that's been kind of the Bucks' pattern. And here we are, game six. So I think Milwaukee gets game six, but I think Brooklyn gets game seven. I don't see how Milwaukee goes into Brooklyn after this game tonight. You build a 16, 17, 18 point lead, whatever they had at one point, and you still lose, and Harden's compromised, Kyrie doesn't play. Yeah, you're probably not getting another 49 spot from Durant in game seven, but
yeah.
I still think I just don't see the path for Milwaukee to be able to beat them in game seven.
Here's the summary of Mike Budenholzer's fourth quarter offense. Are you ready?
Yep.
Ready?
Yep.
Now I hit the rim. It's boom, click, and go back this way. Boom, here, click, and go that way. Boom, that way. Click here, and go back this way.
We all know what that – you know who that was, right, Mike?
I know. I have no idea what that is.
That's Dennis Rodman from The Last Dance.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. All right. There you go. Or we need that clip from the weekend from the Super Bowl where he's walking through all those mirrors and knowing which direction to go. That's a quality Budenholzer meme if I ever saw one. All right. So I think Brooklyn in seven. I think Milwaukee gets game six, and I don't know. I just don't see how Milwaukee gets game seven after this game tonight. I just don't see it.
Okay. All right, so we're going to really briefly touch on the other series. We're not going to spend too much time on them. Obviously, Phoenix swept Denver, so your Western Conference pick is out, so we'll have to see who you end up picking tonight. Just destruction by the Phoenix Suns on Denver. I don't really know that we need to rehash anything other than what a ridiculous flagrant foul and ejection of Jokic. I don't know if you want to address that at all. But
That was completely. I mean, I had to look at it like four times to see if he even made contact with Campaign, who went down like he had been shot by like 12 shotguns all at once at the same time. I don't know. You can't eject Jokic for that play. You just can't. And I think, and this series comes down to two things for me. One is the Jamal Murray injury, and that just decimated the Nuggets' chances. And they just didn't have enough. You have in the backcourt with Monte Morris and Campazzo trying to match up with Booker and Chris Paul. It was a complete and utter destruction by Booker and Paul. And Denver just didn't have enough talent to be able to compete with Phoenix. Michael Porter Jr. was very, very average, if not below average. Certainly performed below the level that I'm sure Denver fans would have hoped that he would have been able to perform at. And Jokic brought it the whole series, but he was basically on his own. And Phoenix has looked really good. I know, again, at some point I called them fraudulent number two seed, and it doesn't look like that was true. It looks like I was wrong on that one. Now, they've had things break right for them. So you beat the Lakers without Anthony Davis. Then you turn around and you beat the Nuggets without Jamal Murray. Western Conference Finals, I think whichever team comes out of the Clippers-Utah series is going to be a more formidable opponent than either of two teams that they faced before. But Chris Paul, I said it on a podcast, I don't know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, that there's no NBA title that could be won by another team or another player that would have a bigger impact on the way that player is thought of and remembered in the history of the NBA. Because right now, Chris Paul has every single thing in his career from an individual standpoint that you could ever want. And he has the reputation, the point guard. He's the traditional point guard that's kind of gone by the wayside. He's still a guy who runs and orchestrates everything and yet doesn't have that title. And if somehow Phoenix breaks through and wins the NBA title this year, talk about a legacy-changing championship and thinking differently about the way that Chris Paul, way his career will be remembered. There's no more meaningful title than Phoenix winning the NBA championship this year for any of these other players or these teams. So kudos to Phoenix. They played really, really well. And we'll see when they match up with Utah and the Clippers. They got as good a shot as either of those teams for sure to get to the NBA finals.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go there first. We'll start with the Clippers and the Jazz, they're tied 2-2. All the games have been won by the home team, which is an exact flip of what happened in the Clippers series. All the games were won by the away team until game 7, right, Mike? Is that correct?
Yes, That's correct.
All right. Or game six. All right. Because they – or was it seven? Did the Clippers? Game Mavericks seven. Go seven. Oh, yeah, yeah. So
Seven.
So it's been the flip to that. I see that continuing at least tomorrow. I think the Jazz will win. Donovan Mitchell's been fantastic. Once again, though, you can just see, like, Conley's absence is huge, and the rest of the team didn't shoot the ball well. Once again, your theory of make or miss league was huge yesterday. I'm rooting for Utah because I already had crossed the Clippers off, and I really don't want to feel bad and feel like I caused this because I crossed them off with two games in the Dallas series. So I'm rooting hard for the Utah Jazz, Mike. And I think they're gonna pull it out. I think it's go seven. I think honestly, Mike, all three of these series are going the distance. And the Phoenix Suns are gonna be sitting. They could take a little Punta Cana vacation for a week because I truly believe all the series are gonna go seven.
I think you're right. This series definitely has a feel where I think Utah's home court advantage at this point is as strong as any team that's left in the playoffs. So I fully expect them to bounce back and win game five. As you said, Donovan Mitchell has been incredible. I mean, you look at his numbers and he just has done, I forget, he's averaging like 34, 35 points a game in this series. And he's had six straight games of 30 points. He's continued what he started building last year in that series with the Denver Nuggets. And he's ascending to maybe that next level of a guy who can carry your team to an NBA championship. That being said, Kawhi has been almost equally as good. And it seems like at home in this series that the Clippers have figured out some things that they can do against Utah in order to be able to, one, go against Rudy Gobert and that Jazz defense. And then offensively, you're getting big production from Reggie Jackson, which I think, to me, that's been the biggest difference when the Clippers have played well, is that Reggie Jackson is making shots and playing confidently. And he's one of those role guys that Kawhi and Paul George need around them to play well in order for them to win. So when I think about this series, I think it comes down to home court advantage. I think Utah's home court advantage is the strongest of any in the league. And so I think, as you said, the series is going to go seven, but I think Utah wins it in game seven at home in Utah over the Los Angeles Clippers.
I agree. All right. Well, we're just, like I said, we just want Utah to win. We don't want the Clippers. Done. Pitch them to the side. Light it on fire. We want the Utah Jazz. All right. And then the Eastern Conference series. Very intriguing. The Hawks and the Sixers. The Hawks obviously come back and win game four. Tied 2-2. Honestly, Mike, I'm rooting for the Hawks now. And here's why I'm rooting for the Hawks. They're just fun to watch play. I really am enjoying watching them play way more than the Sixers. And I feel bad because Embiid, obviously, like, his second half yesterday was pitiful. He's obviously hurt. The fact that he's, I gave credit to Harden for gutting it out there. I got to give him credit. He's got a partially torn meniscus and he's playing basketball on it. And I think the only reason he's playing is because he's so sick of hearing about how he's always injured or has to poop or something like that in the middle of a game. Okay. I think he's sick of hearing it. So he's out there playing. I give him credit for that, but like he may as well have gotten ejected like Jokic in the third quarter because he was terrible in the second half. It was god awful. And he blew that layup with a few seconds left that ended up being the difference in Atlanta winning. I think this goes seven. I think it's a coin flip, Mike. I really think it's a coin flip. I'm rooting for Atlanta. I'm going to stick with Philly, but I'm rooting for Atlanta.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that Philly gets this next game five in Philadelphia. I think Atlanta gets game six. And then If you told me Atlanta wins a game 7 in Philadelphia, I would not be surprised. I mean, it's clear from what we've seen from Trae Young in his first number 9 playoff games that he is not going to be afraid of a game 7 on an opponent's floor. So you're going to get what you're going to get from him. And I don't think it matters where that game is. I think he's going to come to play and he's going to relish the opportunity to play the rest of the series and try to knock Philly out. And whether that comes down to a game 7 remains to be seen. It's interesting because Philly has, with Thybulle and with Simmons, they seemingly are super well equipped to be able to sort of bottle up Trae Young. And if you look at just his shooting stats from yesterday's game, which I pulled up, he's 8 for 26 from the field. He's 3 of 11 from 3. So it's not like he shot the ball well, but yet 18 assists, still ends up with 25 points, gets to the line 8 times. He's just the guy who clearly is made for the moment. Like, he does not care about the pressure. He does not care about, hey, fans are getting on me, or I'm the villain, or just the moment is not too big for him, which for a young player is really, really impressive. And the rest of their roster is solid and they compliment him and guys know what they're supposed to do and they play a role. And I think Atlanta's way better than what I would have thought. And I would double down on that with Trae Young. He's way better than I think anybody thought, myself included. And what he's done in these playoffs to this point has proven that he's going to be a guy who is going to be around, is going to be a factor in the league for a long time to come. That being said, Philly, I mean, there's no way. The Hawks have nothing. I mean, not that many teams do, but the Hawks have no way to contend with the size and physicality of Embiid. Capella is a good player, but as a defender against Joel Embiid, somebody who probably outweighs him by at least 75 pounds, if not 100 pounds, that's a tall task to ask of Clint Capella. So Embiid's, I think, going to continue to get his as long as he doesn't go down with another injury. Simmons has been kind of what he's been, which is he's not scoring a ton of points, but he's doing lots of other things that can help his team win. I know I said it a little bit in their first round series with Washington, but Philly just doesn't look right. And yet I look at what's happening in the other series that we already talked about. And I really think if Brooklyn gets by Milwaukee, and there's some lingering issues with both Harden's hamstring and with Kyrie's ankle, I mean, I think there's a great chance for Philadelphia to just pound them and win that series just through attrition. If they can somehow keep Embiid healthy for 4, 5, 6, 7 games, however many games that series is going to play out. So Philly's path to the NBA Finals is clearly much easier with those injuries that Brooklyn suffered. Now, they still have to get past Atlanta. I'm not 100% sure that that's going to happen, but when I look ahead and start thinking about the Sixers and whether or not they can beat Brooklyn or beat Milwaukee, I think the answer is they can. Now, will they? I don't know, but I think they definitely can. And they're in a much tougher series than they would have thought. I mean, everybody thought that, you know, hey, you want to avoid Milwaukee and Brooklyn, you want to be off of that side of the bracket. So being the one seed was a huge advantage because you were going to get a weaker team. I mean, I think Atlanta's probably not as good as Milwaukee and Brooklyn for sure, but this has been anything but an easy series for the Sixers. So I expect the Sixers to get game 5. I expect Atlanta to get game 6. And then of the 3 series that are left, I probably feel the least certain that Philly would put it away in game 7. So to me, it's a toss-up, but I'm going to stick with Philly.
Okay. I'm gonna stick with Philly as well, but like I said, I'm rooting for Atlanta. So, all right. So I guess now at this point, Mike, we have to make our predictions as far as who we think is gonna be in the finals. I'm gonna go first here. I'm gonna stick with the Nets purely because it's who I've been. I mean, I don't even know how long I've been saying the Nets, Mike. I feel like March.
It's been a while. You've been on the Nets March, for a while.
So I'm going to stick with the Nets. Until they're eliminated, I'm going to stick with them. And I'm going to go to the Suns because, like I said, they're sipping Mai Tais in Punta Cana, getting ready for the next game. So, you know.
Plus, they're already one round ahead of the other two teams in the West, which is a big advantage because you have no idea whether Utah or the Clippers is even going to get to the Western Conference Finals, let alone get to the Finals. So I'm going to echo your pick in the West and go with Phoenix. I think the least likely team to make it out is the Clippers. I think if Utah beats the Clippers, that home court advantage is going to play a role in any potential Phoenix-Utah series. But I'm going to go with Phoenix simply because they're already one round ahead of those two other teams. And I really don't have any idea who's going to advance. And then in the East, look, I've been on Milwaukee all year. I said earlier in the podcast that I don't think they can win a game 7 in Brooklyn. But as long as they're still alive, to your point, I'm going to continue to say Milwaukee is going to be the Eastern Conference representative. Is it out of the realm of possibility that they could win these last two games if Harden and Kyrie are either out or continue to be hobbled? I mean, I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. If I was betting, I would definitely bet that they're not going to win game 6 and 7, but they could. So on that slim chance that I'm wrong and that they're not going to win a game 7 in Brooklyn or that they are going to win a game 7 in Brooklyn, I'm going to stick with Milwaukee just because they're still alive and they've been my pick for a long time. So I have a Milwaukee-Phoenix NBA Finals right now.
All right. All right, Mike. I know the all-NBA teams came out. Do we want to go through them really quickly, or what's your thoughts?
Let's take 2 minutes and just talk about whatever thing. We're honestly going to keep it to 2 minutes. So
okay.
just read the teams and then read the teams one at a time. And we can talk about whether or not we feel like the right guys are in the right spots.
All right. So the first team, we have Steph Curry, we have Luka Doncic, we have Giannis, we have Kawhi, we have Jokic. I think they're all warranted. I can't argue. You know,
if you disagree, what's the spot? What's the one spot that you disagree with?
Probably Kawhi, to be honest with you, because he didn't play as many games.
So you take Kawhi out. Who do you want to put in as your second team? I'm sorry, as your first team all-NBA forward or front court player, if you're taking Kawhi
I'm
out
saying,
of there?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I'm saying, though, if you take him out, who would you put in? I'm not saying you're taking him
Julius
out.
Julius Randle?
Or do you do the – I know that Jokic was eligible, or one of those guys, Jokic and Embiid were both eligible at forward. Are you willing to just position him?
That would be my other move there. Yeah, I guess.
Are you willing to positionally just ignore what positions guys really play?
I think 2 years ago I've clearly positionally challenged. I'm willing to do that, Mike. When we did our all NBA teams, I did that then. Why wouldn't I do it now? So yes, right, I'd be willing to do that.
All right. So you would probably put Embiid in there. Which, if you look at impactful players this season and guys who had great years, if you talk about the five best seasons, I think Embiid has one of the five best seasons this year and probably deserves to be first team all NBA. He doesn't deserve it ahead of Jokic, but he deserves to be on there. So I think I would be okay with taking Kawhi off simply because of, again, the number of games played. But I'm also okay with Kawhi on there. Kawhi is clearly one of the five best players in the league. We can see it from the playoffs. I know this isn't a playoff-based award system, but nonetheless, I think it's hard to argue with Kawhi. So I'm okay with all five of those spots. And unless you're going to move in Embiid for Kawhi Leonard, I don't think anybody can quibble with that anybody else who's going to be on second team should be on first. So go ahead and read the second team.
Second team, Dame Lillard, Chris Paul, Julius Randle, LeBron James, Joel Embiid.
I mean, no argument here. I think the only guy you could make an argument against here, I think, is LeBron, just in terms of the number of games played. But because so many other guys on these top three teams had situations where they had to miss games, I don't think that what LeBron missed toward the end of the regular season with his ankle sprain.
It's like you look at the third team here, Mike. I mean, you got Bradley Beal, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Rudy Gobert. Listen, I know you and I have the fact that Tatum is not on over Butler is ridiculous to me. Okay? Here's why I'm going to say that, Mike. Tatum played way more games than Butler, like 14 more games. Okay? He averaged better stat lines than Jimmy Butler across the board. The only thing that Jimmy Butler has done better, did better this year was shooting percentage. Tatum scored more points. Tatum had more assists. Tatum averaged more rebounds. Tatum had more blocks. Tatum had more steals per game. And he played 14 more games. How is he not on over Jimmy Butler? I'm not a huge Tatum fan, but I think this is ridiculous, in my opinion, that Butler is on over Tatum.
Well, I think that part of the reason why you would pick Jimmy Butler over Jason Tatum is at the other end of the floor. And you talk about defensively, I think Tatum's gotten better, but I think Butler is one of the better wing defenders in the entire league. So you can argue that he brings value there. I think maybe he brings value in a sense of he's a guy who has high demands of his teammates, maybe sometimes too high. And I don't know that the media who's voting for all NBA is factoring things like that in. But I do think that Jimmy Butler has had a really great season but so did Jason Tatum. And I think, look, if you wanted to take Tatum and put him on the team and take Jimmy Butler off the team, I'm not going to argue with you that much, but I don't have a problem with Jimmy Butler being on and Jason Tatum being off as we think about that third team All-NBA slot. So
okay.
Overall, I don't see where there's a big giant snub of somebody who, oh, this guy definitely should have been on it, and he clearly isn't. I think Donovan Mitchell, you look at what he's done in the playoffs, but he missed so many games and he was injured and he didn't play to this same level when he did play in the regular season. Tatum probably has a case, but I'm not sure I'm willing to pull anybody off the team to squeeze him on. Bam Adebayo, who made an All-NBA team, I think, last year, sort of the odd man out in this three-headed center with Jokic, Embiid, and Rudy Gobert. So Bam doesn't make it. Zach LaVine, who was an All-Star for the first time, doesn't make it. I don't think he's on the level of any of these guys that are in those six guard positions. And then the only other name that I guess is out there, De'Aaron Fox. I mean, had a great season for Sacramento, but again, Sacramento's team is terrible. And so at some point, I think voters tend to look at and reward and figure out which players play on winning teams, and that matters. And obviously, De'Aaron Fox doesn't. So overall, I think that the media got it right. I don't have any egregious errors that I see here that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy got voted in for that particular team of All-NBA, but a good overall, I'd say it's a solid voting job by the media and the people who vote, because I think they, for the most part, got it right.
Yeah, it's all right. Do you know what's not a solid job, Mike?
What's that?
I'm about to complain about something that's totally basketball unrelated. Apple Podcasts, right? The new app, update to the app. It's terrible. Have you experienced it?
Well, I've experienced it. So here's what I don't like, and this is just selfishly from a creator standpoint, is previously when I would upload a summary of one of our episodes to the app, it would come out and it would look really, really nice. And it was formatted the way I had it formatted when I entered it into our host site. And now when I enter it in, all of the formatting goes away and it's just this giant jumble of words. It's like one big giant long run-on paragraph. So I'm not sure if that's just initially they're still working out the bugs or whatever, but I guess anytime anything new comes on, we tend not to like it. But from what the limited dealings that I've had with it to this point, mostly from the back end, not necessarily from the user experience, but from the back end, it just doesn't seem like it's working very well.
Well, it looks formatted right to me if you go to the show page. So if you're in the show page, so I'm looking at the show page right now and it looks formatted fine to me. However, if you're on the like summary page, it doesn't look formatted correctly. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
It does. I never know where somebody else told me that, and I never know where to go to find the show versus
You have to, like, if you click on the thing and it says go to episode, then that it shows up. But I don't like how they did it, because I really liked how when I would just delete the show, it would disappear. But now the Apple Podcast, like, if it's an episode I don't want to listen to, like, you know, say it's just one I'm not going to get to listening and I try to delete it, I can undownload it, but it still shows up in my latest episode feed. There's no, like,
yeah, that's not good.
And there's only downloaded ones, but then oh, now that's better. I figured out how to fix that. I fixed something. That's good.
All right. Okay. So maybe it's user error.
Well, it's just how it's structured. Like you said, I think it's something that everyone used to doing something, and then they go and they change it. It's just, I don't like change, I guess. I guess that's why I lived in the same house my whole life. So whatever.
Yeah, I understand. I was a little frustrated with like I said, with the episode summaries, but I'm going back right now and looking at some of the episodes, and it looks to me like they're back to being formatted correctly. So maybe it was just a glitch in the initial launch that they didn't have things set properly, but it looks like things are set back to the way that they should be.
I apologize for the tangent there, but I'm kind of annoyed with Apple Podcasts for changing, because it's been the same way for like at least 5 years, because 5 years ago is when I really started listening to podcasts. So,
all right. Well, that gives us a chance to say to people, please go and subscribe to Hoopheads Pod on whatever app that you like to listen to podcasts, whether that be Apple Podcasts, whether that be Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, YouTube, wherever you can find podcasts, you will be able to find the Hoopheads Pod. We have some great episodes coming up. We're going to continue our series with Dwayne Killings, who's the head coach at the University at Albany. We've done 7 episodes already chronicling what's been the first couple months of his career there at UAlbany. That series is going to continue to be tremendous. We'll have a roundtable episode talking about the most impactful relationships in basketball that our coaches have experienced. So that episode will be coming out on Friday. And then we have some great interview episodes over the next couple of weeks. So please make sure you check those out. Check us out on social media. You can follow us pretty much on all social media channels at Hoopheads Pod, and you'll be able to find all the information about our latest episodes and other things that we put out there. It's worth a follow. So please give us one. Please, if you get a chance, to give us a rating. That also helps. If you give us a rating and review, that helps other people to find the show. Jay, did you have something else that you were wanting to jump in with?
No.
That's a no.
No, just don't forget to wear your skeleton basketball shirt tomorrow, Mike.
All right, I got that. I'm on that for basketball camp. I will have on my Head Start basketball skeleton shirt so you and I can be twinsies tomorrow, man. It'll be really exciting.
I'm so excited.
Be really exciting. I'm looking forward to that. So to everyone out there, thanks for sticking with us tonight. Unbelievable game by Kevin Durant. Unbelievably disappointing game for the Milwaukee Bucks. And
Mike's still surprised.
I'm going to have to go back and watch the tape and really try to figure this out. It's driving me crazy.
This is 3 years in a row. I don't understand why this is a surprise. This is like,
Groundhog's Day?
This is like every time in high school when I would ask a girl out on a date and they told me no, and I kept thinking it was going to change. The outcome was going to change when I went to a different person. No, it wasn't going to change. I was an awkward high schooler, Mike. It's the same outcome. Okay.
So is that the definition of insanity, or is that the definition of is it the definition of Budenholzer?
It's the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's the definition of insanity.
Is that a Budenholzer? Or is that I don't know.
He might be boozing on the plane tonight. He might need to.
Budenholzer. It was. It was a rough
one.
If you're a fan of the Milwaukee Bucks, it was a rough game to watch because, man, they blew that game. And kudos to Durant. He was incredible. And he deserved to win that game with as well as he played. So
all right.
Good night. It is 1:15 in the morning. A lot of great stuff coming up on the Hoopheads Pod. So please check us out. Hoopheads Pod. on Twitter, on Instagram, everywhere you follow us. And thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.